I'm Wamsi Mohan. I'm the IT hardware and supply chain analyst at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. So most of this audience, I believe, is healthcare audience, so probably not interacted with many of you. But I saw Ying's photo up there, so go vote for him in II. He'll appreciate it. This is the first year that we've actually got IBM with us at our healthcare conference. The intersection of technology across so many different verticals is just becoming so much more intense, whether it's across autonomous cars or whether it be in healthcare. AI is just taking a life of its own and very, very topical. So we're really appreciative of Deborah DiSanzo, who is head of IBM Watson Health, who's joining us here today. Deborah has a lot of experience in the field, and the amount of change that's coming since the last time I met her just a few months ago is actually quite phenomenal and quite incredible. So extremely exciting. I'm going to let you maybe introduce your Watson Health Division for a couple of minutes, and then we'll jump into some Q&A.
Okay, Wamsi, thanks so much. So IBM formed Watson Health 2 years ago, April of 2015. We are an integrated business unit of IBM. We're called IBM Watson Health. IBM built us a building in the middle of biotech land in Cambridge, Massachusetts, IBM Watson Health building. There's 7,000 employees, and we do cognitive technologies in healthcare.
Perfect. So, Deborah, you know, at IBM, at its own analyst day, had spoken about a $2 trillion number in terms of the amount of wastage that's there in healthcare, and you identified the market opportunity for you sort of as maybe a couple hundred billion dollars. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about sort of what the underlying drivers there are?
Right. So we, the U.S. healthcare market is $3.4 trillion. The global healthcare market is $8 trillion. The Institute of Medicine estimate is that 30% of that healthcare spending is redundant or unnecessary care or fraud, waste, and abuse. And so if we extrapolate that from the U.S., we think that unnecessary fraud, waste, and abuse, redundant, is in the area of $2 trillion. What causes that redundancy? What causes it? Variability in care is great. Not getting to the right care the first time is great. Tests that are repeated because people don't understand or don't have access to the data contributes to that. And fraud, waste, and abuse is in there as well. So out of that $2 trillion, we said, yeah, a couple of hundred billion is the addressable market for IBM. That's in addition to about the $160 billion that is your traditional digital health market and what life sciences and life sciences, IT and life sciences. So we got about this $360 billion market, and we're focused in really five verticals in there, helping governments do analytics on their healthcare spend, getting to a pay-per-value model versus pay-for-volume. We are focused in imaging, we're focused in oncology, and we're focused in life sciences.
So when you think about, you know, I mean, I think everyone in the room probably has heard of Watson, but when you think about Watson Health, how is this differentiated from other companies that are intersecting tech and healthcare in some ways?
I think, how is it different? The first thing that I want to say is IBM has said from the beginning that no one company can transform healthcare alone. And that's very true. We see really an ecosystem of partners coming together to work on a variety of issues that we have in healthcare, from cost to access to variability in care. So we work together with a lot of companies that are really at the intersection of healthcare and technology. But here's what Watson Health does. And for a while I was calling it the four C's. We just added a fifth C, so I'm going to talk about it in the four C's plus one. We really do start with the cloud. You and I were talking out there about the cloud. It needs the cloud. We sit on top of the IBM cloud and the Watson data platform. And we need the cloud. We need the compute power in the cloud. And quite frankly, we need the availability of the cloud. So we start with the cloud. Then you need data. Data is very important. For years and years and years in healthcare, the data wasn't accessible. It was hidden in corners. You couldn't get at it. If you can't read it, you can't get the richness out of it. You can't get the answers you need out of it. So IBM acquired data. Now, I'm gonna list off these data sources, which we call content in the second C, but it's not that IBM is taking this data and saying nobody else can have the data. In fact, the data is there to train Watson and for our partners to be able to use it as well. So in the acquisitions of Phytel and Explorus, we acquired 100 million electronic health records. Now, what's the importance of that? The basis of Watson is we read electronic health records, and machines need to be trained, so we have a rich database to train Watson in reading electronic health records. The clinical part of the equation is only one part of it. You also need the claims data. So with the acquisition of Truven, we acquired about 200 million covered lives in claims data. So now Watson can read both the clinical and the claims data and come to best pass for patients. Of course, in our health, we need genomics data. We are putting genomics data into the Watson Health Cloud every week, every day, and also social determinants of health. So we in 18 countries around the world, we do health and human services, and we're collecting social determinants of health. By the way, we've read in like 26 million PubMed articles as well. So this, you start with the cloud. The cloud has content in it. And then on top of the content, we have 65 specific Watson Health APIs. Now, these are specific to Watson Health. There's other Watson APIs that are used as well in conversation and discovery. Watson Health APIs, though, are really tuned to healthcare. So if you're going to use a natural language processing API, it knows it's been trained for years on how to read electronic health records. There's five of those. And then we apply those in five areas. So cloud, content, cognitive technologies, and we apply them in five areas with collaboration of partners in government space, in imaging, in value-based care, in oncology, and in life sciences. Now, the final C, which we added, is this is healthcare. Clinical evidence is tremendously important. So we're really a year and a half into selling our clinical products, and we are now releasing clinical evidence as to how they're working. So, what's different between us and other companies in the intersection of healthcare and technology, cloud, content, cognitive technologies, in those five things, getting clinical evidence, but plus, we're partnering with a lot of those companies bringing cognitive technologies into their solutions as well.
Great. Now, so that, let's maybe dive into some of these pieces here, right? So when you think about the cloud, healthcare being somewhat regulated, HIPAA is obviously a big deal. So how do you address concerns of using the cloud, and how do you make sure that the privacy norms are met and like all the regulatory norms are met? From IBM perspective?
So we're viewing it as healthcare is quite regulated, and it's better to come at it from that standpoint than another. So healthcare is quite regulated. So when we started, building the IBM platform for health, and sometimes I say the Watson Health Cloud, but the IBM platform for health, we start with the IBM cloud and the Watson data platform and IBM security, which is very important. But if you're in healthcare, you need to address the privacy concerns. In this country, we call it HIPAA, but in other countries, China, it's not called HIPAA, but there are privacy concerns in China and in Europe as well. So we HIPAA enable the cloud. But we don't stop there. If you're a life sciences company and you're going to do drug research or you're going to build a medical device on top of this cloud, the cloud has to be what's called GxP compliant, good manufacturing practice, good documentation practice. In order for the cloud to be GxP compliant, everything in the stack, from the bare metal to the cloud data services, to the ingestion of data, to the HIPAA enablement, to the operations of it, to the auditing of it, to the documentations of it, has to be verified and validated, and it has to be built in a quality management system, just like a medical device company would build a device. So the IBM platform for health is built within a quality management system. All of the software in that stack, all of the software goes through a rigorous VNV process so that we can say it's GxP compliant, and our clients can come in and audit it, and if the Food and Drug Administration wanted to come in and audit it, they could as well.
So cloud seems like, you know, you've taken a very differentiated approach. How about on the content side? So you touched about, you know, some of the acquisitions that you've done. Clearly, some of the data that you've acquired is being used to train Watson. What is the, you know, competitive advantage that you think that arises from owning the assets that you have, and where do you think you need more to do more M&A, particularly within the context of Watson Health?
So the acquisitions are really the foundation of Watson Health, and let me speak about this for a minute. If I take the acquisition, I'm not going in order, imaging comes to mind first. We acquired a company called Merge, which was a picture archiving communication and cardiovascular information system company. We acquired Merge not because we particularly wanted to be in the PACS business, but because Watson a decade ago, started to learn how to read cardiovascular and breast images. So now, and if you have spent a decade in deep learning of cardiovascular and breast images, you read them well. So Watson reads them well, but you can't go as a tech company. You just can't go as a tech company into the imaging space. So what's the best imaging company that we can acquire? Merge had this phenomenal, they were the leading vendor-neutral archive, 30 billion images. And so not only did Merge bring to us a foundation for our imaging business, they brought a phenomenal amount of very qualified imaging technology professionals who come into Watson Health, and they bring a platform to launch imaging. 30 billion images, it sounds like a lot. We released Watson Health Clinical Imaging Review for aortic stenosis in March in order to train Watson and to verify and validate that this works properly. It took 6 million images. There's a lot of work here. Cardiovascular took 10 million. So the benefit of that acquisition was obviously the data and the know-how and the platform. If you look at the other three acquisitions that IBM did, Truven, Phytel, and Exploris, they all brought something different in, but they stand up the pillar that we call value-based care. Phytel, 45 million electronic health records. But Phytel is the leader in best-of-breed population health. We have 35 million patients who are benefiting from Phytel population health applications today. And a very small portion of those right now are cognitive. Mm. So we have a tremendous opportunity to bring better population health to the Phytel clients and patients using cognitive technologies. Exploris brought this tremendous, the Exploris guys are rock stars in big data and healthcare, so they brought this tremendous platform of taking in electronic health records. Today we take in electronic health records from 400,000 providers every day into a big data network and are able to run analytics and cognitive to help real world evidence for drug companies find the best paths for patients. And so, but Exploris brought not only the methodologies of taking in the data, but also the people who had been doing it, the expertise. And then finally, Truven brought in 2,500 employees, epidemiologists, scientists, analytics, really, you know, tremendous expertise in Medicare and Medicaid analytics, government analytics, and 200 million covered lives in claims data. So the acquisitions are really the foundation of it. On top of the people and the data, then we get to use the cognitive technologies of Watson Health to make those solutions even better.
And as you look forward over here, do you think that there are, you know, gaps within IBM Health that you need to sort of fill through incremental M&A?
You know, never say never. Right now, what happened when IBM started to amass all this data is that other people started saying, oh, I have data too. And it's not so much that you have 50 million electronic health records, but what are the quality of those electronic health records? And if they're particularly dirty data, then you spend a lot more time ingesting, curating, cleaning the data. Are the images able to be annotated? You know, there's always going to be a need for data. Today we're getting data through, you know, we have a medical imaging collaborative of 27 people. Data comes in that way. There are other ways to get data as well. But there's always going to be a need for particular data sets, or there may be a particular company that will advance something in what we're doing in imaging or life sciences or government that we would look at.
Yeah, it's really interesting because as we look at cross tech companies, we're finding that data is becoming a huge differentiator, right? So the Teslas of the world who've got millions of miles on the road are leveraging their data for autonomous driving. Uber's doing the same thing. DD's doing the same thing. Apple's doing the same. So it sort of resonates the importance of data and that being a true differentiator. And you guys have collected a tremendous amount of this and trained for a long time. Can you talk a little bit about drug discovery and what Watson Health is doing particularly there, because I think that'll be a really exciting topic for
you. It's one of my favorite places and one of the places where we're just seeing tremendous results. So we're working with a lot of life sciences companies in drug discovery. Most of them, as you can imagine, don't let us talk about it. but there are a couple of universities that do let us talk about it. So the first is Barrow Neurological Institute in Arizona. They are the largest neurological institute in the U.S. Dr. Bowser, we worked with Dr. Bowser on ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. It's debilitating. There's no cure for it. It affects 6,000 new people every year. So Watson read in everything that was publicly available on ALS. The scientists at the Barrow Neurological Institute trained Watson on what they knew about proteins affecting and genes affecting ALS. And Watson read in the electronic health record data from Barrow Neurological Institute. We then took 1,500 genes. Watson took 1,500 genes that we thought perhaps could affect ALS and ranked them from 1 to 1,500 based on this data and the training it received. From 1 to 1,500, the likelihood that this gene affected ALS. Barrow then took the top 10 and said, wow, 8 of these genes could affect ALS, and 5 of them are genes that we never before saw affected ALS. Wow. So what does this do? And Dr. Bowser will say, Watson did exactly what we hoped it would do. It found in the data what we couldn't find, and we did it in weeks, But there's another one, too, another disease. Toronto Weston worked on Parkinson's disease, another disease where there is no cure. Did the same methodology. We read everything publicly available on Parkinson's, and we get the electronic health record data from Toronto Western on Parkinson's. And what we did then, we looked for a particular brain protein that clumps in Parkinson's patients and is thought to be a cause of Parkinson's. We read through, I think it was 20 million articles. In the same text, we looked where we found these brain proteins to where there were drugs approved in Ontario. Not necessarily for Parkinson's, just drugs approved. There were 52 of them. We ranked them 1 to 52, said, here's where we think these drugs may have impact on Parkinson's. And Toronto Western said, yeah, 21 of them could, and 16 of them we've never seen before. So now Toronto Western gets to go in, look at those 16 drugs, and see real-world evidence. Is there some way that these can affect Parkinson's disease? And again, we did that in 16 weeks. So could a life sciences researcher do that over time? I suppose if you can read 20 million public articles, but that's the power of drug discovery.
No, that's quite incredible. Yeah. When you think about one of the other areas of that both patients and doctors struggle with is identifying, you know, patients that can fit the criteria for certain clinical trials. What has Watson done in this particular area?
So clinical trials, a number of them fail. Everyone that fails, it costs $8 million. Getting a patient in a clinical trial is not easy. You know, our doctors only have, on average, 8 minutes to spend with a patient. To go through the thousands of pages in electronic health record, looking for the inclusion and exclusion criteria for clinical trials, and then matching them with the clinical trials available, it's very difficult, and it does not happen often. What Watson does is we read the electronic health record, we derive the inclusion and exclusion criteria of a clinical trial, and then we match the patients with the clinical trial. This is how fast it is. At Highlands Oncology Center, they were going to do Novartis breast and lung clinical trials. We did a study with them of 2,300 patients without Watson. 1 hour, 50 minutes. 1 hour, 50 minutes to enroll 90 patients. Just inclusion exclusion match with the inclusion exclusion criteria of the clinical trial. With Watson, 78% reduction in time to 24 minutes. Now what does this mean? If you can find the patients faster, you can get to them quicker, you can attempt to enroll them. And so we're just seeing, and in the institutions where we have clinical trials matching in, we're seeing that enrollment of patients in clinical trials is going from less than 1% to like double, triple, four times, five times the enrollment. So it's really very powerful.
Yeah, that's quite incredible. Mm-hmm. Could you address a little bit around Watson for oncology when, oncology patients are looking at various treatment options? How accurate is technology and Watson in predicting sort of what is the right modality based on all the input? And what inputs are you looking at? Is there any different from what the doctors are looking at?
So this is very important. If you're going to have, you're going to use cognitive technologies to help physicians treat their patients, accuracy is important. So first of all, start out with, and this is, IBM is very passionate about this, who trained Watson? For Watson for Oncology, Memorial Sloan Kettering trained Watson. I don't think, there could not be anyone better. And it's not that MSK spent 6 months training Watson. MSK started in 2012, and we're in still training Watson on cancers today. So we have a long-term partnership with MSK. What data went into Watson for Oncology? Tens of millions of de-identified patient records to find out what worked and what didn't work. 200 medical textbooks, 300 medical journals, something like 12 million pages of PubMed studies, and of course all of the work of American Cancer Society and clinical trials. That is what goes in. So now when an oncologist sits down with a patient and uses Watson for Oncology, the patient's data, not somebody's sort of like WOMSI, but the patient's data from the electronic health record is derived, and then a red, yellow, and green probability of success is presented to the oncologist. What is the accuracy of that? We know because we have now run trials on this. The accuracy of Watson for Oncology is 90% of the time it will agree with the tumor board or oncologist. What about the other 10% of the time? Is Watson wrong? And first of all, it's not a black box. Here's the green recommendations. Here's who trained it. Here's where you can point to in the data to see it. The same with the we wouldn't recommend this. University of North Carolina did 1,000 patient study retrospectively, looked at 1,000 cancer patients, and we used Watson for genomics to match the genome of the cancer with a drug. 99% of the time, Watson for genomics matched the tumor board. 1% of the time, Watson didn't match. Ended up being 300 patient cases. And Watson was right. Watson had found medications from 2013, 14, and 15 that the physicians in the tumor ward simply didn't know about. And it's that every day, 8,000 new clinical studies, new trials, new pages of research are coming out every day. It's impossible to keep up, but Watson is reading in it every day, so we have those drugs. So
that's quite incredible. Can you talk about the willingness of companies to share their data to train Watson when, how do you manage the fact that at a future point in time you might be using doc-trained implementation of Watson across their competitors?
This is also very important to IBM. We introduced our AI principles at the beginning of the year, and one of them I talked about already. You need to know who trained your cognitive technology, and so we make that available. Also, we are passionate about this. Your data is your data. So, for example, if And we're working with Teva on real-world evidence, with Teva on an asthma device. Teva's data is Teva's data. If Teva wanted to, they could you know, put it into the Watson Health Cloud. If they don't want to, they don't have to. Teva has their data. They have access to the data in the Watson Health Cloud as well. And the insights that derive for that in real-world evidence or in a feature on the asthma device, those are Teva's as well. Those are not going to go to any of Teva's competitors. And we're actually very passionate about your data. Your data, your insights, and we're going to tell you who trained Watson.
But does that mean that as you go across horizontally, you are essentially training Watson on that specific company's data every time?
Everybody would bring their own data. So if there was another company that made an asthma inhaler, and you know the medical devices all, I know this from previous lives. If you were going to look at two data coming from two electrocardiograms, and you were going to do analysis on the two electrocardiograms, the measurements that go into the electrocardiograms are fundamentally different, and so could be that the feature sets that you pick are going to be different as well. So everybody's data is their data, starts with their data, and they're likely going to get different insights from that as well.
Right. What is the cost to collaborate with Watson Health? Like, you know, how much, what does it really take for a company to say, yes, I'm going to, you know, take this dive into cognitive, I see the opportunity set over here. What does it really cost? How long does it take to go through implementations?
So there's a wide range of things. So let's start from the very simple. The Watson APIs are software as a service. So you could, you know, and companies may use Watson for oncology. Certainly hospitals doing that. That's a charge per patient per study. The images, and we have a collaboration of Watson Health Imaging, 27 companies in that. So those companies are using the APIs, and they're getting a cost per image or a subscription fee if they want to pay a subscription fee.
Yes.
Thank you to access those APIs. In life sciences companies, though, if we're doing real-world evidence and we're doing drug discovery, perhaps you do want a subscription because you want to have, you know, pretty frequent access to the data, pretty frequent access to the APIs. So you would get a subscription, and depending on how much data you want to use, how many APIs you want to use, the subscription price varies. Usually, though, with every new client, we start with a proof of concept. I was saying, Wamsi, when we were out there, I get this every day. Can Watson do this? And the answer is, with the right data, with clean data, and with enough training time and the people to train, Watson can do it. But some things are going to be quicker or easier than others. So we start with a proof of concept. So we know what we're going at to and what the subscription needs to be.
So we're almost out of time. I did want to mention that Angie Grimm from IR is also sitting up front over here. So if you have follow-up questions, feel free to reach out to her or to me, and I can put you in touch. Just to wrap up, what I want to sort of focus on is, what is it that you're most excited about? Like, what are the collaborations or partnerships that you're looking at today and most excited about in sort of the next, sort of call it the year or two?
There are so many. So we're doing drug discovery with Pfizer and immuno-oncology. We are working, Baheal is the largest generic drug manufacturer in China. They have 2,000 sellers in China going out to hospitals, who is now our partner in distributing Watson for Oncology in China. In China, you have 3 minutes to see your physician. So you can imagine they're very, very excited that before you get in, Watson for Oncology runs, and bring that in with your physician is going to make a tremendous difference there. In London, we're working with the Harrow Council. Harrow Council is a suburb of London, and 35% of their budget is spent on aging right now, 35% of the budget. But, you know, people aging gracefully in their home, some people may need rent, some people may need heat, some people may need a ramp, and so Watson is helping to identify really how best to spend the dollars in the aging population in Barrow. We are doing, we are working with TIKAS in Finland on, with the government on putting in a IBM platform for health and doing cognitive on population health for TIKAS. In imaging, we are working, we're working in breast with Hologic, University of Miami, Sutter, and UC San Diego on really, you know, how to identify lesions in breast better and how to use deep learning and cognitive technologies to bring that. So there's, you know, a lot has happened. A lot has happened in the 24 months of Watson Health. A lot has happened in the 19 months that I've been in Watson Health. And, you know, we are at the very beginning. I sometimes say this is like 1993 in the internet. You didn't know what the internet was going to be in 1993. We're at the very beginning of cognitive technologies in healthcare now as well.
No, perfect. Thank you for taking all the time. We look forward to seeing you again over here next year and telling us about all the wonderful things that you've accomplished and what we've got to look forward to.
Thanks, Wamsi. Thanks so much. Thanks for having us. Thanks.